Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. I'd like to welcome everyone this week to my talk radio show. And this week's topic is Coming to Full Circle, Mother-Daughter Breast Cancer, A Family Affair. And I would like to wish every mom out there this past weekend who celebrated their Mother's Day a wonderful, happy Mother's Day. And today with me, I have three guests. The first guest is Terry Wilson Gray. She is the executive director of The Bridge. The other one is Desiree Jacobson. And the third guest that I'll have this morning with me is Jessica Sullivan. I want to quickly give you guys an idea of why we are talking what we're going to be talking about today. In 2007, approximately 40,460 women were expected to die from breast cancer. Only lung cancer accounts for more death in women. In the African American community, breast cancer is the second most common cause of death, preceded by lung cancer. Research has focused on the print broadcast of communication to decimate breast health messages among the African American female community. However, when compared to the print and broadcast media, interpersonal communication was found to be ideal for African American female community. With this in mind, Desiree Jacobson, who is my first guest for this morning, did a study in her thesis program and found that there's a generational of mother-daughter's communication network that underwent through a role reversal, and the role reversal results in a daughter having to assume the superior motherly role in taking care and responsibility for their mothers in terms of health care, and therefore the relationship would have come to full circle with regards to the daughters taking over the responsibility of making sure that the mother's health is taken into full consideration. Full circle, basically, what this is all about in my book is we talk about we, in the normal cycle of human life, we eventually will become our parents' parents. And so with this in mind, what this study tells me is that it's in the natural that sometimes some of us are trusted rather quickly into the role of being a parent's parents, and some of us do have the gradual time for us to eventually get to this position. However, I'd like to start this morning with Terry Wilson Gray with The Bridge. Terry, please tell us a little bit about your organization and what do you do for all the women that are going through such a traumatic experience.
Well, The Bridge Breast Network was founded in 1992. Mm-hmm. By breast surgeon Dr. Sally Knox and a group of breast cancer survivors. And what our goal is that women will not have to suffer in silence with breast cancer because they lack medical insurance. Mm-hmm. So our program assists women from the diagnostic stage that they've either found a lump and they need to have it diagnosed all the way through breast cancer treatment. And we not only help them with the medical care associated with that, but also connect them with the resources for the emotional and social support that they need.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And to date, can you tell us about roughly how many people have you been in contact with that how successful this program has been?
The program is very successful because we know early detection and treatment leads to survival. Our program has touched the lives of over 78,000 women in the North Texas area. And each and every day, we see more and more women being diagnosed with breast cancer or finding a lump and it's diagnosed as breast cancer. So we feel that we're making a major impact in getting these women the care they need as well as helping them to live full and productive lives.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How does this, you know, initially when at the beginning of this program I mentioned about those such alarming statistics right here, how does this mirror to, say, North Texas?
It's North Texas is the same as all across the nation. African American women do have a higher death toll, unfortunately, from breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And there's a variety of reasons. I don't know if we can put our finger on one reason why that's the case.
Yeah.
But we are known caregivers as African American women, and we're caring for the family, and we're caring for everyone else. And sometimes we put ourselves last. Also, I think education, lack of information, as well as resources, knowing where to go, we can be aware that we should have a mammogram, but where can we go to get an affordable mammogram? And
mm-hmm.
if that mammogram comes back and says, we do have breast cancer, where
yeah.
can we go to get treatment if we don't have insurance?
I see. Desiree, I have a question for you right here. Can you tell us, based on your studies, about breast cancer statistics, I mean, how is alarming is this, I guess, you know, compared, you know, we talk about the national, some national numbers here as well as based on Terry, what the North Texas numbers are. Can you tell us a little bit more about the statistics and what your findings are?
Certainly. What you outlined in the beginning of the program is really in line with what you'll find in any study, and really what it boils down to is that up until the turn of the century, some studies will say it's the 70s, some studies the 80s or the 90s, is that African American women were in line with their white counterparts with mortality rates and incident rates and their breast health with diagnosis and their mortality rates. But up until the turn of the century, African American women were suffering from a higher mortality and a lower incident rate, which means that they were diagnosed less with breast cancer but had a higher death rate from breast cancer, which obviously women and other nonprofits and studies were trying to focus more on why is that the case, and obviously trying to focus more of their efforts on that audience and trying to figure out what they could do to lower these mortality rates from breast cancer. And I personally, that's what focused me on my research into African American women, and in my study obviously found this key role reversal in healthcare from mothers to daughters and their caregiving, and especially with their healthcare needs and breast healthcare needs, when the younger generation obviously assumes the roles formerly assumed by the older generation and stepping in when their health care would be needed.
Okay. Now, when you mentioned about the role reversal, and we talk about the mother-daughter relationship, and especially in this case, your study focused on African-American women, is the role reversal solely utilized in the healthcare industry, or is there something more to it?
I think there's something more to it. My study solely focused on breast health, which is why I was mainly reporting on that. Mm-hmm. I would love to, obviously every researcher loves to, once they find something, spend more time on it, but your resources only allow you to focus on what you have outlined. So unfortunately I was pigeonholed to that, but that's why in my future research study, part of the study I propose for future researchers to pick up on that, and they can go into spirituality, food and diet, certain other things that obviously that could tie into health, but they can be their own studies within and of themselves.
Now, where does the role reversal stems from? I mean, are we looking at, are there specific factors that's involved here?
I think so. I think mainly it was a respect, because these younger generation women obviously felt a tremendous respect for these older women. And it was, there was one instance where it wasn't a mother and daughter, which I
mm-hmm.
found really interesting. There was a focus group that I held. This one girl who, I'll have to remember if she knew her before or not. It seemed as though she did, which
mm-hmm.
is really interesting. Which is what I really enjoy about focus groups, is that you get to be there and be present and pick up on nonverbal cues.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as this the older woman showed up, she grabbed a chair for her, asked her what type of refreshment she needed, made sure she was as comfortable as possible, went and found her a blanket for her to cover up, and she was just very attentive to her. And I just couldn't help but, it still carries with me right now, because, you know, I think I would have asked her if she would like anything to eat, but she was constantly making sure that she was okay throughout the whole process. And
well, she had that motherly instinct to me
mm-hmm.
of
mm-hmm.
taking someone special. That's
mm-hmm.
very good. Tracy, do you have any frontline information with regards to the Bridge Network? Can you tell us in terms of like some of the stories of your clients that that's really made a significant difference in your life, in the sense as if you've been working in this and seeing some of the wonderful stories that you can share with us this morning?
Well, I mean, you're absolutely correct. I mean, as daughters, our mothers have raised us and have instilled in us, and they took care of us without, you know, asking for anything in return. And we see that when daughters call our program and say, my mother's found a lump in her breast, or my mother's been diagnosed with breast cancer, you know, what is it that we need to do? It's not what does she need to do, it's what do we need to do.
Right.
And so they bring them to our program, they go with them to the appointments, and even to the point where maybe mother moves in with them so that they're there firsthand to take care of them and to provide for them, you know, whatever they need, whether it's financially now that mother can't work because she's been diagnosed with breast cancer and she's going through treatment, or whether it's just to make sure that, you know, she has whatever she needs, that she's not wanting for anything, that she's not in any pain.
Right, right. Now, Jessica, you were born and raised in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and of course you received your bachelor's degree from LSU, and now you are doing, and you also received your master's degree from Lamar University, and now you are a PhD candidate in communication studies in the University of Texas in Dallas. Tell us a little bit about your personal experience with mother-daughter role reversal experiences.
Well, I guess it's, you know, typically the same, but I mean, I think that's just with anything, because, you know, as parents or older family members or whatever decline or they're sick, and then you're the one in your prime of your life, I think that means, you know, the torch is passed on to you, and then you're the one to kind of have to, you know, make sure everything's taken care of. So it's kind of like the passing of the baton, because that's, you know, eventually.
Have you witnessed any role reversal among your peers and within your own community?
You know, being in education, you kind of see that. I know when I was a part of Desiree's focus group, I talked to her about how I worked at a pre-K center in Houston several years ago now, and it just so happened that four women in the school had breast cancer at different times, and actually two of them actually worked in the classroom with me. So when I first got there, they kind of like took me under their wing, and then when one, you know, was in her last stages, you know, we all would take turns, even a lot of the younger teachers would take turns going over to visit her, and, you know, I would cook for her family, you know, just kind of like, you know, she really wasn't eating anything, but just to try to help take care, because she couldn't, you know.
Okay. Do you feel also, does social economics also plays a role reversal, plays into this role reversal that we're talking about?
Was that for Desiree?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, I mean, I'm sorry, for Jessica. I mean, as you know, you were in the community, you see all this, and you experience it yourself in some ways, and I guess my question would be more like, sometimes in a role reversal, a lot of times, I guess, you know, maybe different economic social backgrounds where the mother is more independent and she's sort of take care of herself and take charge versus, say, maybe an African community, American community, that because of social economics, the role reversal is a little bit different. It's more prominent because the daughters or the child has to come up, you know, step up to the plate, so to speak. Do you see that plays as an important role?
I think it's a factor, but I think it's more to what Tracy said, that it's more about how you were raised. I think that has, I mean, and I'm not the expert on this area, but I just think it's how you're raised and how you brought up that's just what you should do, and you're doing the right thing.
I see. Well, Terry, what are your thoughts about that? I mean,
well,
on a broader span.
I think it's a combination of both. We've seen where the daughters have been away at college and have opted to put their education on hold to come home and be with their mothers during their breast cancer journey. And, you know, that says a lot about not only the daughter and her commitment and love for her mother, but also about the mother. And it makes, you know, the mother sad in one regard that she really doesn't want her daughter to put her education on hold.
Right.
But also it makes her proud to know that I've raised my daughter, I've given her this foundation, and she's giving this back to me in love.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
On a personal note, I'd like to, you know, add in, it's not, you see this not just with breast cancer, but with other health or needs. My mother-in-law lives
mm-hmm.
in the house with me, and my mother lives next door.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I extend taking care of them, you know, whatever it is that they need, and that is part from upbringing, but as an honor and a respect for your mother for what they've done for you.
Right.
That you
right.
want to give that back.
Right.
Absolutely.
Desiree, can you speak more a little bit about the communication theory that would bring benefits to this type of communication?
Certainly. During the focus group, I believe Jessica was a part of, there were two other women. It was actually a mother and daughter. I can't reveal their names, but she was, you know, obviously the younger daughter was representing of the younger generation and the mother the older. And the younger generation, she had a higher education level. And although she had that higher education level, she was also working towards her master's degree, which obviously, as we know, when we're in school, we don't make the most money. So I think what I found in my theory and what I proposed is that there's this certain group of women that have this higher education level, although they do have a lower socioeconomic level, that allows them to receive the information needed, and they are a little more proactive with their health care, and they're able to become a part of that community to disseminate those ideal breast health messages mm-hmm. among their community, i.e. their mothers especially. So they are in a position where they can be the healthcare information providers. So that was a part of the communication model. I developed it from the diffusion of innovations theory, which
mm-hmm.
among that is the decentralization process, which allows for the use of opinion leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Opinion leaders are experts among their community that disseminate information from a more top-down method, but from the decentralization process, it allows for a more horizontal network. So I combined both, allowing for top-down and horizontal, for the use of the younger African-American women that receive information and disseminate it to their peers, and also from a more top-down method to their mothers. So it sounds really complicated, but once you see it on paper, it makes a lot more sense. But once I saw that information sharing among their mothers, that really hit home to me. And especially because socioeconomic does play a lot into it, but then I saw that sometimes other factors come in, like education. Because they're highly educated, that breaks the barrier for socioeconomics. Although it does play a key role, they are highly educated, which allows them to get the information and disseminate it among their peers and their mothers.
Now, do you think that this theory will benefit the African-American female?
I think it will. I think right now, obviously, because I focused on breast health individually,
mm-hmm.
it's going to begin there. And as I mentioned, there was other health issues that came from it. I think that it could be replicated in future studies.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to see that happen. I'd like to see somebody pick it up and try to use it in maybe a different geographic area, and maybe a different healthcare aspect, and try to go from there, because that's just how research is done and how it's used. And
I see. For those of you who are just tuning in, please call 347-327-9995 if you would like to join us on the air and share your own experiences. This is from My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio Show, and my guest this morning is Terry Wilson Gray, who is Executive Director of the Bridge Network. I've got Desiree Jacobson. She just recently actually graduated from the TCU this past weekend, actually. Congratulations to you in your master's degree. And her studies is on communication among African-American women, and, of course, the focus is on what we talk about today, coming to full circle and breast cancer. Quick question for with regards to the future of coming to full circle here, Desiree. What are some of the benefits in identifying the full circle relationship between African-American mothers and daughters, the thing that something that you have not discovered, and with your studies, you know, something that can be used as a model for everyone else?
I think specifically with this model, obviously, as I was speaking before about replication, I think that a lot of studies, and this is just my own personal opinion, I know maybe other researchers maybe feel this way, but other organizations and, you know, and of course I'm not going to name any, but maybe focus on other older methods to disseminate ideal breast health messages.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel personally that they're not hitting the target.
Mm-hmm.
I think
mm-hmm.
that the model that I've created, it's focused on interpersonal communication for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this model is focused on the community, specifically, you know, Dallas that I've worked on. And so that just geographically and African-American women, I think that that would really hit home. And obviously if somebody could pick it up around the U.S. and try to focus on their own geographic area, then we can really hit home and see if it, if it works in their area, if it hits target, then we can go from there. Because I think focusing on print is more cost-effective right now because obviously it's mass distributed. You can send it out and, you know, internet and things like that. And it does work for a lot of audiences. It works for a lot of women that I've actually spoke to. They said that, you know, one of the questions I asked is, if you were diagnosed with breast cancer, where would you go for information? A lot of them said the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, a lot of women are still saying, I would talk to a friend. I would go talk to someone. I would go to church. I would talk to someone within my community. They're still missing that interpersonal communication. What really hit me is that this one woman said, I refuse to go to self-checkouts because I need that one-on-one interaction. People still need that, especially the older generations. And we can't discount them because these pamphlets, although they're great, we can still use them in some way. Some studies have integrated them with interpersonal communication. We're still not, personally, how I feel is that we're still not utilizing them as best as we can. We're still not hitting the mark.
I understand. Well, Terry, I mean, in your experience with the Bridge, follow up on what Desiree just said. I mean, what kind of programs you guys have in place in terms of drawing these individuals out, you know, to give them that level of comfort? Because obviously you're looking through a couple of things here. One is such a traumatic experience that you go through, oh, my God, you know, I'm having this. And is there any kind of outreach that that you guys do as far as going out there actively engaging the community?
Well, I agree with Desiree that it has to be that interaction. And
mm-hmm.
for our program, for the Bridge Breast Network, our outreach in the African-American community is through community events and through church outreach. Presentations in the church, whether it's on Sunday morning, whether it's at a women's mission, but it has to be where people can see and you're relating to them one-on-one and they see this is not just about something in general, but this is about them personally. It's
mm-hmm.
a concern for them as an individual and providing them with the necessary tools and resources. So it's not just this is a piece of paper, but being able to also answer questions that people may have, you know. Again, we talk about lack of information, but how do you receive that information? And there's a lot of myths that go on out there about breast cancer. And so being able to dispel those myths and let people know you may or may not have a family history of breast cancer, but you could be a candidate to have breast cancer. And then these are the things you need to do, as well as, and like she says, pass this on to the younger generation who can hear it and understand it and then disseminate that to their parents, to their family members, is an excellent way to get the information out in the African-American community.
Now, in her studies, that is Desiree's studies, it focused on communication. And obviously there's lack of communication or better communicational networking and everything else to get the word out. With regards to the Bridge, can you tell me or tell our audience basically right here the things that, say, someone that just doesn't not have the pamphlet, for example, what what to look for? Is there any specific age that they need to get to start looking at themselves? Anything that they can do with regards to, you know, like the term for me, from a guy perspective, just kind of being naive here, self-examination. You know, you hear that because you hear it on TV, for example. But what are the things that you guys have in terms of programs that, okay, there's a certain age group, this is what we need to do, this is what we have a game plan from here on out, strategically, I guess, making the contact with the communities that you guys are in?
Well, the industry standard varies between whether or not at 35 or at age 40 you should get your first mammogram.
Mm-hmm.
But women also should be doing self-breast exams, as well as men, because men can get breast cancer. I know this is about
mm-hmm.
mothers and daughters, but men can get breast cancer also.
That's correct, yes. Mm-hmm.
But with our program, we are seeing younger and younger women being diagnosed with breast cancer. Our youngest is 19.
Wow.
But we have also performed breast surgery to remove breast mass on young ladies as young as 13. So
wow.
From the Bridge standpoint, we're saying, as soon as young ladies hit puberty and start to develop breasts, we want them to understand about their physical appearance and their breasts and to learn to do a self-breast examination.
Hmm.
Now, the shower cards kind of give you an example of, you know, do it in the shower and have your hand raised above your head and to feel across your breasts. Kind of doing that over the radio is kind of hard for people really to see that. When
right,
we go
right,
out in the community,
yes. mm-hmm.
we take models so that people can feel the breast models to know
mm-hmm.
what a normal breast feels like, as
mm-hmm.
well as what a fibrocystic or breast that actually has a breast tumor in it.
Right, right.
But
and, you know, it's interesting because you mentioned about fibrocystic, because my sister back in Malaysia just had an operation on that. And and she was actually diagnosed with that, my gosh, it's about 20 years ago, and finally got to a point where it was just so painful. And about a month or so ago, her doctor managed to, and this is the other thing, managed to finally encourage her to have the surgery.
And women with fibrocystic breasts need to alter their diets also.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Caffeine makes that situation even worse.
Mm-hmm.
And women will see a dramatic difference if they are diagnosed with fibrocystic breasts if they reduce the amount of caffeine intake.
Interesting.
And, yes, eliminating coffee from your diet or sodas or chocolate will make
mm-hmm.
a significant difference. If the mass gets too large, then it needs to be surgically removed because
right.
it will be very painful.
Right.
But also women are under the impression that says, well, I've been told I have fibrocystic breasts or I have very lumpy breasts, and so they just disregard when they get another mass.
I see.
But in fact, they need to have that checked, and a breast MRI is actually the best way to detect whether or not there's a tumor in a fibrocystic breast that's not a benign tumor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are you guys very welcome in the community in terms of what you guys are doing?
We are. People who come to the Bridge spread the word. They are very
mm-hmm.
grateful for our program. They're getting the same health care as someone who has insurance. Our
mm-hmm.
medical network, we cover 16 counties.
Mm-hmm.
We have a medical network of between 200 and 250 medical providers.
Fantastic.
Who work with us. And they're sitting side by side in waiting rooms with women who have insurance, with women who are self-paying, who are self-employed,
mm-hmm.
and no one, they have no label on them that I'm a Bridge person or I have no insurance or I'm low income. It's
mm-hmm.
about quality care, quality of life, and getting them back into the community so they can be productive. And they become our word of mouth in the churches, in the community, at the local stores, when they're out there and they tell women, you need to have your annual mammogram, you need to do your monthly self-breast exams, and if you find something and you don't know where to go, call the Bridge.
How far do you guys reach out from Dallas area right here? What's your geographical coverage, I guess?
Well, let's see now. We cover 16 counties, so
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to try to memorize
sure.
and each one. If people have access to the web, they should
right,
definitely
right.
go to bridgebreast.org.
Okay.
But we go west past Fort Worth into Parker, Palo Pinto, into those
mm-hmm.
counties, ERAP. Mm-hmm. And we go as far north as Grayson County.
Mm-hmm.
And going east, we're into Hunt and Kaufman in those counties, going east and in the southern sector past below Dallas, Navarro, Ellis, those counties.
Mm-hmm. And what's that website address again?
It's www.bridgebreast.org.
Okay, great. And is there, I guess, an office phone number that you can share with us?
Yes, the phone number is 214-821-3820. And, okay, of course. And let's see. Again, like I said, the website, if you have access mm-hmm. to the Internet, is very good, or to call our main office number. And
mm-hmm.
we have bilingual staff also.
Fantastic. You know, what's interesting to me about bridge, the term the bridge, you know, it just something came to mind in the sense that even in my business where you have a transition between the older generation and the newer generation, because the old generations may not be technologically apt versus the new generations.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, they're exception to the rules because my 91-year-old mom is on the net every day. But it's very interesting the term, the word bridge itself, because you do have a situation here. You have a community where you have perhaps, I'm just guessing here, maybe half, who are not going to find you on the net, who don't even basically, I guess, heard of you, maybe don't, you know, not even heard of you. And so how are they going to be, you know, able to be, you know, get the information apart from, say, the churches and that they go to and the communities? Do you guys have a special outreach that you guys do to get to these people?
Well, we try to partner with local community groups in
mm-hmm.
all of the counties that we serve.
Mm-hmm.
Opportunities such as this where people can hear us on
mm-hmm.
the radio, on the web,
mm-hmm.
Any opportunity that we have available.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a toll-free number that I want to give out, and that's 1-877-258-1396. So if someone's not in the Dallas area but they
mm-hmm.
need assistance, like I said, any opportunity, it's spreading the word. We say our logo is two pink ribbons that form that bridge, and it's a bridge
mm-hmm.
of hope. It's also bridging the gap for healthcare access.
What is that phone number again?
It is 214-821-3820, or if you're out of the Dallas area, it's 877-258-1396.
Great. And now, with regards to your organization again, do you guys have a lot of funding? Who are the ones that are helping you guys right now? I know that you guys are nonprofit, and with the sudden economic turn right now, what are you guys doing with regards to, you know, making sure that you guys are viable and getting the constant support that you need?
Well, we do get funding from the local Coleman's, United Way, individual contributions. Individuals have fundraisers and they raise money for our program.
Mm-hmm.
For every dollar we receive in donation, we leverage that 10 times in medical care. So we
Fantastic.
Can usually get someone through their breast cancer treatment for under $20,000.
Wow.
And that includes their treatment as well as their follow-up.
That's I would say that's fairly inexpensive, wouldn't it be? I mean,
yes, that's the leveraging every dollar 10 times, because breast cancer treatment costs anywhere from $150,000 to maybe $250,000.
Mm-hmm.
So that $20,000 actually translates to $200,000 worth of care.
Mm-hmm.
And the medical community that we work with, they are a major part of that. Last year, they donated over $5 million in services to our clients.
I see. And you guys are not necessarily affiliated with any particular medical association or anything like that, right?
Not at all, because we cover 16 counties. Every hospital is not in every area. So
mm-hmm.
we
mm-hmm.
go out and we try to recruit providers, doctors, surgeons, surgical facilities, oncologists mm-hmm. to come in and help support our clients.
Wonderful. Desiree, what do you think about the benefits that you have encountered and with regards to the applications of it to different cultures and different backgrounds?
You mean from what I found?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because of the unique relationship between mothers and daughters, just from speaking with you and reading your book, Donnie, I think that this generation role reversal will speak to every culture and background. Just from thinking of my own friends, and especially with Mother's Day that just passed us, I think that healthcare is universal, and just I think that this younger and older generation, once that comes into play, I believe that that could be replicated into any culture, because that's something that we all share, our mother and daughter relationship among all cultures, especially with what you just shared between you and your sister, and what I've heard you discuss with your mother and your own culture, and from hearing, speaking with my friends and their mothers, and I just think that that's something that we all have in common.
Do you feel like that the perhaps the African-American community, it's a little gels a little bit better, even though, I mean, you find that the obviously in this case it's the one-on-one personal communication that makes a difference here, but do you find that perhaps maybe in the in say the non-African American community, because of they may have their own sort of ideology about things, where they have a personal take charge attitude, maybe in some ways it's hurting them in some ways, not being, not having someone who is on top of the situation when it comes to, breast cancer communication?
Whatever is affecting them negatively?
Yeah.
I think it was Terry that was speaking to this, is that I think what happened with the older generation, what I was hearing from the studies, is that when they were growing up, it was more of let me see if I can put this into words. They were focused on, they were focused on the past, and mm-hmm. there were certain things that happened in the past that were pretty horrific to their audience in general. It has to do with healthcare and what I've discovered. And it's just, it just turns your stomach into what happened with healthcare and healthcare studies specifically. And it deterred them for a very long time from receiving healthcare and from trusting doctors in general. And that's for a long time what deterred them from receiving any type of healthcare and healthcare services. And to this day, women, you'll hear them, especially the older generation, saying, "I don't go to the doctor unless I'm sick." And they're very steadfast in that. It will take a big mountain to stop them from, to get them from going to the doctor. And I think that that's where the younger generation will come into play. But this younger generation that's coming in now, they know the study, but they don't have that firsthand knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
They see the pain in their mother's eyes, and it hurts them. They understand that. However, I think without that firsthand knowledge, they're able to go over that mountain and see what's on the other side, and understand that it's okay to be proactive with your health care, because you will live longer and you can take care of yourself and you can take care of others. Not all doctors are going to, I don't believe that doctors are going to hurt you, but this is probably what might be going on in some of their minds. Not all doctors are going to hurt you like what happened in the past. We can trust them now. Everything is going to be okay if we just all stick together. And so that's what I found in my study.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they can go with that information and benefit the older generation with things that maybe held them back in the past. And there are some populations of older women that were receiving education during that time and saying, no, not all doctors are going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
We can trust them. But unfortunately, the majority of the women that I was in touch with, the older generation, were held back by that.
I see.
And weren't going to receive the quality health care that they should have.
Terry, what are your thoughts about that in terms of trust, and perhaps in some cases, maybe in your experiences about with your clients, were there any other sort of like intervention where finally someone just, hey, we got to jump in here and be your pillar to help you?
Well, I think trust is a major factor, but also the African-American community, their foundation is their faith,
mm-hmm.
a strong faith background. And what I try to do when I go out, especially in our outreach in the church community,
mm-hmm.
is to let them know it's okay to seek help from someone else. and to use your faith that you're going to seek help and get help from the right person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we have to blend all of those theories together to help them make that step to say, I'm going to take action. And then to remind them that, you know, they want to be here for future generations.
Right.
And, you know, that we touch their heart with that. You know, it's not just you have to do this, you have to do this, but that you want to do this not only for yourself but for future generations.
Yeah. You know, you're talking about trust. It's interesting. I'm recalling right now because my dad died at a very young age, and of course what happened was in his case was it just got too bad with his illness. And we talked about the trust issue. So this is not necessarily just for women, because for men, I remember that my mom and my sister had to literally just say, okay, look, you're coming with us to the hospital, and that's it. And, of course, in his point of view, you know, like, oh, my gosh, if I'm going to the hospital, when I come back, I'm coming back in name only. And so as a family, we are getting caught in this situation. Well, what do we do? And finally that we did manage to get him to the hospital, and had we not got him to the hospital, he would have passed on 2-3 days afterwards. But the fact that we did that, and he went on to live for another 5 more years. And so it's a very, very difficult decision for a family to do, to make that decision in terms of coming in and so sort of like taking charge and making things happen. Question for you, Terry, with the latest rumors, and it's not actually going to be rumors because that's what President Obama has in mind, eventually to roll up some form of universal health care. How would that impact what you guys are trying to do with the bridge?
Well, we won't know what it's going to look like until there's a finished product.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that our program is a model for programs across the nation,
mm-hmm.
where you have nonprofits, you have private organizations, you have the medical community all coming together to first provide quality health care for women and individuals who don't have health insurance. Also, that we're helping to lower those health care costs, and it's not to a point where we're bankrupting anyone, mm-hmm. but we're also giving people choices and empowering people to make, you know, good decisions about their health, and that it's not that you're forcing individuals into anything. So I look forward to seeing what a plan, you know, will look like, but it's going, for it to be successful, all the players, you know, have to agree on this. It can't be something that's shoved down one person's throat that this is the way it's going to be, because we don't want to sacrifice quality of care just
mm-hmm.
for cost.
Right, right. Do you guys get any a tremendous amount of support from the state of Texas?
Actually, we don't receive any kind of state funding for our program. We do work with local representatives who are in charge of the breast and cervical cancer program, which is
mm-hmm.
paid for through Texas Medicaid. But mm-hmm. our program for the care that we do is supported by individual donations and grants.
Okay. Is that something that you would wish that it would change in some ways? I mean, being that it does impact a lot of people. And having said this, this is, you know, I know we're talking about the African-American community here, but breast cancer is, you know, it's culturally, you know, neutral. It hits everyone.
Yes.
And in some ways, it's gender neutral.
Well, that is correct. We would, you know, definitely, we don't want to turn down any money that, you know,
mm-hmm.
would limit us from being able to serve more people, because we are definitely seeing an increase
mm-hmm.
in demand for services. I think the economy is playing a large role with that, with people
right.
out of work, and they were in the middle of breast cancer treatment. So more and more people are coming to our program. But, you know, we would definitely evaluate, you know, every opportunity for funding and what that, you know, meant.
Would you guys think that there will be an increase in your services in this current difficult economic times? Because
oh,
you mentioned the fact that, you know, people are now switching over to the bridge in some ways.
We're already seeing an increase. I think awareness is playing a part
mm-hmm.
with that people are becoming aware that there is someone out there to help them. But also we're seeing people who were previously working and now being laid off. So the economy is playing a part
mm-hmm.
with a higher demand for services from our program.
Is there anything we can do as, I guess, you know, for my case right here, being a talk show host, and say for Desiree, who have done extensive research on this, and in some cases for Jessica, who, you know, it's in her pursuit of her academics and being involved with this morning's discussion here, what are the things that we can do to help facilitate the communications about what you're trying to get out there?
Well, I would love to, you know, speak further with Desiree on her study and see how we can expand our outreach program and our outreach efforts into the African-American community and use her model, you know, within our program. Because we cover 16 counties, you know, that gives us a large market to go outside of the Dallas area and test that theory in other areas, as well as all of us spreading the word. That it's important, you know, this is an important issue, and that it's no longer just that there's a family history, because we're seeing more and more women coming to our program that have no family history of breast cancer.
Wow.
And we say history starts somewhere. 20
right.
years ago, genetics was probably high on the list, that if you had a family history, you know, then those were the majority of the people getting breast cancer. Now we look at the environment, the food that we're eating, any hormones in the food. And
yeah.
when we see, you know, a 19-year-old with breast cancer,
right.
when we have 23, 25, 27, 28-year-olds with breast cancer, and it's more aggressive in the younger women, we have to all promote breast health awareness and just good healthy eating and healthy lifestyles in our communities. Any opportunity that, you know, we can further, you know, extend this dialogue would be great.
Wonderful. Now, let me ask you this also. I know we talk about the breast cancer. Now, how about the survival? I mean, I know this much. I mean, in a lot of different situations that one of my guests actually coming up in June, she actually survived. She's a breast cancer survivor, and she had it at 24. And so I guess my question for you would be, obviously, the earlier you diagnose it, the, you know, the better off you are. Can you share some light on that?
And that is correct. Early detection is key, and early treatment is key. A lot of times when a woman finds a lump in her breast, that fear sets in that, what if this is breast cancer, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so we believe if we don't name it, if we don't discuss it, it will go away.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, I'm here to say that there are people who can help you, and if you get treatment or if you get those mammograms or do those self-breast exams and find your lump early, survival rates have increased enormously.
Mm-hmm.
My mother-in-law is a 42-year breast cancer survivor. She will be 82
wow.
years old this year.
Wow.
And so technology has come a long way since her first breast cancer surgery in 1967.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are seeing, you know, higher and higher survival rates. You see 30, 20, 30, 40-year survivors every day from
mm-hmm.
breast cancer.
I guess it's just a sense of awareness and then overcoming the fear.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you guys have, I presume you guys offer some sort of counseling too for the family?
We, when they are diagnosed with breast cancer and come through our program, we have them come in and we sit down with not only the person diagnosed, but their family members as well as their support network.
Mm-hmm.
We want you to bring everyone in, and we talk with the entire group for about an hour and a half, and it's a group session so you can see other faces of survivors and other
mm-hmm.
faces of individuals who have been diagnosed, so that people really understand breast cancer is an equal opportunity disease, knows
mm.
no age, no ethnicity, no economic level.
Right.
And then you can start to answer the questions and ask the questions, and then you gain that confidence that I will be a survivor.
Mm-hmm.
Because state of mind is also plays a major role in your survival from breast cancer.
That's very true, because if you have the right attitude and you think positively, then obviously it makes a positive difference within your body. I mean, it is a closed system after all. And so so it does make a big difference. Quickly walk us through, if someone, say, you know, who listened to our show today and they're not sure what they have, and here they call the numbers that you've given us, kind of walk through that person on the step-by-step what you guys have to offer if they do have breast cancer.
Well, if they have breast cancer or they just found a lump and they need to know what to do, they should call that number, and our intake coordinator will screen them to make sure they're eligible for our program. And that's based on you live within one of the 16 counties, as well as we take individuals whose income is 250% above the poverty level, which is the working poor. A lot of people say, oh, I know I'm over income.
Right.
Make the call. Even if you're over income, we have case managers who will then provide you with the other resources.
Right.
So we want to get your application processed. It takes about 2 days maximum for your application to be processed and approved. Within a week, you will have an appointment to see someone to determine whether or not you have breast cancer. If you are diagnosed with breast cancer already, we bring you in for that new client orientation session. And within a week or 2 weeks, you have your first session with a breast surgeon, and you're getting your lab work and all your imaging done and having that dialogue with the surgeon to determine what type of breast surgery and what type of treatment is best for you.
I mean, that's fantastic. That sounds like you guys have a, you know, the whole everything organized to whereby they will feel much more comfortable, because probably the first immediate reaction they have is shock and fear.
That's correct. And I can say firsthand, I am a two-time cancer survivor, and that first diagnosis, your first thing you think is, I'm going to die. I've heard the C word. But, you know, it's not the case. There's great survival from cancer and from most cancers. You can still live a productive life.
That's wonderful. We're coming very close to the end of the show, and I'm not trying to spring anything on you guys, but one of the things that we do in this show is that we, you know, this show is based on my book, From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. And it's not about food recipes as much as it is recipes for living, the words of wisdom that mothers share with us. Now, I want to give each and every one of y'all an opportunity here to let us know some of the recipes of the, or the recipe for living that you remembered your mom telling you, and that you can share with us and with the listeners this morning. Desiree, let me start off with you.
Can I do one for my grandmother?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Whoever that has made an impact in your life, you know, grandmothers are mothers. How's that?
Right, that's right. I would just say, because she's a Cuban immigrant, so she's always taught me that hard work will pay off. I guess that's just really cut and dry and simple, but, I mean, she just lived it and breathed it and probably told me that every day.
I see. Okay. Jessica, how about you?
I guess the best advice I ever got was just, you know, live your life based on whatever your principles, and, you know, have faith, believe in God, and, you know, trust in that, and don't get caught up on the small mundane stuff that can bog you down, or, you know, day to day, and, you know, kind of keep focused.
Okay. Terry, now the spotlight's on you. I know, I hope we didn't spring this on you, you know, quite of a sudden here, but I know you are a daughter as well as you are a mother. So maybe perhaps you do have something that you recall what your mom told you, or someone who, you know, who you respect very much, and what they have to say, and that you can share with us, and perhaps what do you have in terms of something that you want to part off to someone else?
Well, I think the one thing, and it goes along with our discussion, was each one reach one and each one teach one. And with regards to breast cancer, with regards to just life in general and all the positive things that go along with life, that's something that we should all try to do.
That's fantastic. I mean, who may I ask, I mean, if that's something that, that was handed down to you, and in terms of making it, you know, something that is a wonderful topic of discussion. I love it. Each one reach one and each one teach one. I love that.
My father came from a long line of educators, and so it was just something that was ingrained in us from children, and I have put it into my children, and they're putting it into their children.
See, that's what I believe in. I think the those wonderful recipes for living, they're timeless, and they go from generations to generations, and they're passed down. And each generation obviously will have the opportunity to sort of refine it in their own way to reflect their taste buds, I guess, you know, for lack of a better term, in their time. But certainly, there's so much wealth of wisdom out there that we can all learn from. And I really like this. I'm writing this down. Each one teach one, and each one reach one, and each one teach one. Right?
Yes.
And certainly, I would certainly do that. And I hope you don't mind me using this on the.
Oh
internet.
No.
Because this is a wonderful words of wisdom right here. Parting words from you, Terry, with regards to your work, the bridge, and everything else. What can you just sum up to for us here in a quick minute? So,
well, we just hope that, you know, you give your mother as well as any other family member, and our family is not just our biological family, but our extended mm-hmm. family, the gift of life, and that would be to tell them, you know, how to stay healthy, tell them and make sure that they're getting their annual mammogram, and just let them know that you love them.
Thank you very much. Wonderful words of wisdom. Appreciate that very much. Jessica, how about you? Any parting words for the listeners?
I guess the only thing is just remember to make sure you do your self-exams and, you know, make sure you tell a friend, to remind a friend to do it. So if everybody did that, then I think that could get more people.
One quick question for you, too, with regards to that. I'm sorry for jumping in. Do the younger generations, like, say, for you, and, you know, we heard from Terry about the fact that the younger generations, you know, you has to be more aware of this breast cancer issue. Do you all even have conversations about this?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, a lot of my friends are very proactive. We discuss it. We pass out the little shower mm-hmm. instruction deals, and everybody's at least tried to do, like, a walk or the three-day mm-hmm. or something to get involved.
I see. Okay, well, great. How about you, Desiree? Parting words about what's that you have encountered based on your studies, and now that you are, you know, recent graduate with a master's degree, any parting words?
Well, I would definitely like to echo what Jessica said. It's so important to just be proactive with your health care, no matter what age you are, especially the younger people, just to get in the habit of knowing, I know it sounds pokey, but knowing your body, knowing, because it changes, obviously, but, mm-hmm. you know, changing along with it and knowing how to take care of yourself and diet and exercise, that's so key. And just being a part of your community is so crucial. Places like the Bridge. Before today, I didn't know about the Bridge, and it's so tremendous. I'm just hearing about all the things that you guys are doing for the community. It's tremendous, and I'd love to be a part of it. And just taking part in your community, knowing your body, and taking part in your community goes hand-in-hand with speaking with those within your inner circle and making sure that they're proactive with their own health care, because you love and care about them, they love and care about you, and together we can, you know, together we can fight this and we can beat this. So.
That's great. That's wonderful. And I will get you guys together, though. I believe, Terry, you would like to stay in contact with Desiree, and I will at the end of the show, I'll email you guys or something, and I'll make sure that you guys are able to contact one another.
Thank you.
My pleasure. I certainly would like to help any way I can, and this would be the least I could do right here with regards to talking about something very very important and very very special. Like I say, even to me personally. That this is very, very important to me to know that we are doing something positive and making a positive difference. I do want to thank all three of you guys for coming and showing up this morning on the air with me and sharing your thoughts about something that's very critical in today's world. And I do appreciate, Terry, you taking the time out to talk with us this morning. And Desiree, Jessica, thank you so much for being with me this morning and talking about coming to full circle and about mother-daughter relationship. And for all of you, I just wanted to thank all of you guys again for listening to our show. A couple of announcements before we sign off from the air. For next week, we have a wonderful Mother's Day celebration We are going to be talking to the forgotten moms, Mr. Mom, whether they're by choice or by situation, circumstance. These people have chosen the role of being Mr. Mom. And as with regards to the book signing, have a book signing this weekend at Barnes & Noble in Arlington at 1 p.m. and hope to see you guys there to support in bringing motherly love to center stage. Thank you again for joining us, and thank you to all my guests, and talk to you soon. Take care. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Jessica? I mean, Desiree? Hello?
I'm still here. Right.
Yeah, hey, let me give you her number, okay?
Okay, let me...
Her number is... I believe we might be off the air here. I just want to make sure. I think we're off the air. Anyway, her number is 214-821-7595. 7505. Try 7505. 214-821-7505, and her name is Terry Wilson Gray, and she's the executive director of the Bridge Network.
Oh, great.
And what do you think of the show?
I thought it was great. I think it was a great mix of personal experience and facts, and it tied in well with your theme in the book.
Okay, well, great.
And I think it can relate to, and you know, not just the African American community, but also anybody who has that mother-daughter relationship, and knowing what either they have right now with the role reversal or what would lie ahead for them if it hasn't already taken place.
Okay, wonderful. I'm so glad that, you know, we're able to do that. Thank you for your contribution, and I'll catch up with you later, okay?
Great. Thanks, Tony.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.